Good morning, good day, and welcome to the Charity and Security Network's Peace Building and Practice Series, where we talk with the experts about their work to reduce and end violent conflict around the world. I am Kay Ganan, Director of the Charity and Security Network, and it is my privilege on this cold January day in 2014 to speak with Tuija Talvitie, Executive Director of the Crisis Management Institute, a Finnish independent nonprofit organization that works to prevent and resolve violent conflict by involving all actors relevant to achieving sustainable peace. Tuija has over 20 years' experience in international leadership, social development, and conflict resolution. She emphasizes multi-stakeholder, inclusive approaches, innovation, and ethical leadership. Under her leadership, CMI has grown at a steady pace. And prior to joining CMI, Tuija was director of the British Council of Finland and was a CMI board member from 2005 to 2009. She sits on the boards of various international and Finnish think tanks and NGOs and holds an MA in English Philology and International Politics from the University of Helsinki. So welcome and thank you, Tuija. Let me ask you first to tell us a little bit more about CMI.
Well, thank you very much, Kay, and many thanks for this opportunity to talk to you. Well, CMI, as you said, and articulate it very clearly, is a Finnish independent non-profit organization, and the focus of our work is preventing and resolving violent political conflicts around the world. We were established in the year 2000 by the former president of Finland and a Nobel Peace Laureate from 2008, Mr. Martti Ahtisaari, who himself has a long-standing international career in peace mediation and conflict resolution. Our work is made up of three priorities, if you like: mediation and dialogue, where we support peace processes around the world; mediation support, which is to offer support for different mediators, including individuals, multinational organizations, and states. And thirdly, and maybe most importantly these days, is to support states and societies in conflict prevention and conflict resolution from within, to offer support to states who are in conflict and who very often see international engagement or intervention as an interference into their domestic issues. At the moment, CMI has about 75 specialists working on conflict prevention and conflict resolution, and our geographical spread covers North Africa and Sahel, Sub-Saharan Africa, the Caucasus, Eastern Europe, and Central Asia in the form of Afghanistan and the Middle East.
That is a huge undertaking to work so many people working in so many places that need the assistance that you provide. I wanted to ask a little bit about how the work is carried out. There are so many conflicts in the world and so many different kinds of armed groups. Can you tell us how CMI assesses new missions before taking them on?
Our work is defined by our strategic priorities and by our geographical priorities as well. That means that those are the themes and those are the areas where we feel that we understand the local circumstances, where we have good connections and good contacts with local people, where we feel that we have something to offer. But in order to go into any place, and as you said yourself, conflicts are very difficult circumstances very often. They're very complex and they're very volatile, which means that we have to be very careful. We are very clear about not doing anything that we don't believe adds value. Sometimes we're asked to go into an area or take part in a conflict resolution activity where we feel that we're not the best party or the best actor to take part, and then we might suggest somebody else. But it's absolutely crucial for us to have a strong understanding that we have something to offer, that there is an opening, that we have good contacts in that particular area or country, and that we have some sort of credibility, and where we think that an independent actor that usually works in between different tracks can offer something new. Of course, money and resources are always an issue, so the work has to be funded, and there needs to be space to act. some of these conflict areas are usually very crowded spaces because there are a number of organizations who want to offer help. And we're very clear also about making sure that when we go somewhere, we go there for a good reason. Very often, CMI is invited to go into a place by the local people. And even then, we need to assess very carefully whether we are the best organization, the best actor to offer help. But it's a, you know, it's a delicate and a long process, but it's a very important process that we need to get right.
Working in these areas can be risky for your staff. What are the general practices in your field for security arrangements for staff on the ground?
Well, as you said, K-security is the first and foremost issue on our minds whenever we think about our work. We have a key principle that says that people come first, and we pay a lot of attention to security issues. We have a security policy, an overall security policy for the whole organization. We have a security manual, which is something that all staff have access to. We do security trainings, and we do security assessments every single time we go to a country. It can be a country that we often go to, and even so, the security assessments are always done. And when we go to a new country, the security assessment is very thorough. It usually includes a longer visit by our security advisor, who makes a thorough assessment of the situation, both using his own understanding and expertise, but also talking to a lot of people on the ground, both locals and internationals. But I think it's important to, for us at CMI, always to keep in mind that people come first, and security is something that is not, you know, something that comes into our minds when we go to a country, but it's an integral part of our planning phase. So it comes into play from the word go. These security assessments that I mentioned, they happen every time somebody goes abroad, and these assessments usually include a general security situation, an assessment of also the suitability of the people who are deployed, their accommodation, possible office space, the way how they travel there, the use of hotels, the use of vehicles on the ground, et cetera, et cetera. There's always a very detailed security plan which is established every single time we go there. And obviously some places are more risky than others. So we also have a traffic light system, which means that if it's a place where we feel that we know it quite well and we understand the security situation quite well and there are no huge risks involved in going to that place at that particular moment, then it means that people approving the travel of the people who go to that area, to that country, happens at a lower level. But sometimes if the situation is something that we deem as very risky, we usually have a number of our leadership team members convene and together assess with the security officer whether we think that it is safe to send our people to that particular place. We're also very clear about the fact that if our staff decide that they do not want to go to a particular place or if they want to leave a location once they arrive there, we allow that. We absolutely want our people to feel also comfortable in these places. And many of our people are very experienced. They've traveled to very dangerous places over decades. And we trust that they have a pretty good understanding also and a gut feeling about their own safety. So if they want to leave, then we'll let them leave. When our people are in the field, they are monitored at HQ by our security people in Helsinki, and we keep regular contact with them. The most volatile contexts, such as Afghanistan or Yemen, we are in touch with our people on a daily basis. In other locations where we feel that the risk is not that great, it can be less frequent. We also have communications, good and effective communications tools for our people, satellite phones, etc., And we also are constantly in touch with other actors on the ground in terms of getting security-related information from them. So it is a process that we take extremely seriously, and it is a process that we invest in.
When you are involved in a project, CMI has a policy of engaging all actors to a conflict in order to achieve sustainable peace. I'd like to ask you, why in general does CMI have this policy favoring talking to everybody rather than a selected few players in a country?
Well, I think if you think of any other process in society in general, in Western societies, for example, our present understanding of human behavior is such that by involving a large amount of people, by involving the relevant people for a particular process, the end result is usually A, better, and B, more sustainable. In our work for peace, we focus on effective peace processes. And whereas it's important to end the violence, we think that it's even more important to ensure that a peace process is sustainable, and that we also pay a lot of attention not just to the short-term gains, but also to medium and long-term gains. We absolutely believe, and I don't think we are the only ones, that in order to create a conducive environment for peace, you need broad engagement, broad ownership. We also understand that private actors, i.e. informal actors such as CMI, can go to places and can help and add value to processes outside the formal and direct fora. So we think that what we can do is make sure that a peace deal is not just with a narrow elitist group, which is usually men with arms. And we know that any peace deal, in order for it to be sustainable, needs the buy-in of society, at large, broader society. And I think this is an understanding that is gaining ground much, much more, because it does replicate our understanding, as I said before, of other processes in our lives and societies where if a decision is taken by selected few and it's forced on others, it doesn't usually stick. It makes our work a little bit more difficult, and it makes the timelines are longer, but it does pave the way for more sustainable peace processes, and that is what CMI's work is all about.
Have you found in recent years, I've read that there is a rise in the number of conflicts involving armed groups as opposed to the number of conflicts that are state against state. And does this mean that it's necessary for organizations like Crisis Management Initiative to engage with non-state armed groups more frequently?
Well, I think that's exactly it. The nature of conflict has changed and evolved a lot since, after the Second World War, for example. And the great majority of conflicts are within states. And states can be very precious about their own sovereignty. And usually foreign intervention or third-party intervention is not something that is welcomed. One of the good things about an informal actor or an independent private actor like CMI is that we do not legitimize any of the groups that we talk to. We usually have a more low profile, and we usually don't have any carrots or sticks as far as our activities are concerned. We cannot force peace on anybody. We cannot force parties to come around the table. The only thing that we have at our disposal, the only strength that we have, is our ability to persuade and help people gain consensus, because it's only through consensus that these big transitional shifts from conflict to peace can happen.
Well, thank you. Before we wind up here, I'd like to ask you if you have any additional comments or observations that you'd like to make for the Charity and Security Network audience?
I think what is really important is that when we look at any conflict settings, is that we understand that these are multi-actor contexts. There are a number of actors who can add value and bring about better peace processes if they work together. Working together means that we understand our own strengths and we understand the strengths of others. And that can only happen by talking to each other, by making sure that we also, as the peace-building community, make sure that we have good, dynamic dialogue amongst ourselves. And that is why I, for example, very much welcome this opportunity to talk to your network and tell you what an independent actor does and how we can add value. But we cannot act by ourselves. We very often can support and you know, show the light into the dark corners that not all official peace processes can even see or have time to focus on. And yet, if you make the mistake in a peace process of marginalizing a group, and it doesn't have to be a key group, it can be a small group, and we've seen it so many times, it usually doesn't bode well for the peace process. These groups, when they're marginalized, want to have their voice heard, and usually in conflict settings, the best way to get your voice heard is to pick up arms, and that way try to gain a place at the negotiating table. We believe that we should talk to these groups before they decide that the only way how they can make a difference is by being violent. And that is why just ensuring a broad-based consultation in these critical transitional phases from war to peace is so crucial and so important. So we, as the different actors who want to help, need to be able to talk to each other and need to do it very constructively without competing with each other.
Thank you so much. This is fascinating, and I am so glad to know that CMI is out there doing its work and making a very important contribution to human security. And we look forward to staying in touch in the future. Thank you.
Absolutely. Thank you, Kay, and it's been a real pleasure.